Athens News Matters is sponsored in part by the WUGA Community Advisory Council, dedicated and involved individuals who help WUGA stay connected with our listeners, community organizations, and issues in the Athens area. Learn more at WUGA.org.
Today on Athens News Matters, how well is the local economy weathering the continuing crisis of the pandemic?
Spending our money locally this year, and I'm not asking you to do it forever, is the most important way to keep it going.
We'll talk to David Bradley from the Athens Area Chamber of Commerce. This is Athens News Matters. I'm Chris Shoup.
And I'm Alexia Ridley. Also today, the return to sports in the midst of the COVID-19 crisis has yielded mixed results at best.
The interesting thing to watch with the NBA is it will be the sport that is ongoing real time while widespread vaccine distribution is rolled out.
We'll talk about how sports are doing at balancing safety with the desire to have sports.
Those stories, our panel on the week in news and more, coming up on Athens News Matters.
Morning Edition is everywhere.
Monroe, Sao Paulo,
Beirut,
London. Reporting from bunkers, alleys, jungles, and deserts. But most importantly, we're wherever you are. Start your day with a trip around the world and wake up with Morning Edition from NPR News.
This is Athens News Matters from WUGA News. I'm Chris Shoup.
And I'm Alexia Ridley. The multi-year debate over a proposed historic district covering the west part of downtown Athens came to a head in a sometimes contentious meeting of the mayor and commission. By a 6-3 vote, commissioners approved the proposal. Gene Davis reports on the plan and the fallout.
After nearly an hour of public comments and an hour of comments from the commissioners themselves, the commission approved the creation of a historic district for western downtown, roughly bordered by Doherty, Lumpkin, Broad, and Pulaski Streets. The entirety of downtown Athens is already recognized as a historic site by the National Registry of Historic Places. So why would parts of downtown still need to be designated as historic on the local level? Tommy Valentine is the executive director of Historic Athens, a non-governmental nonprofit that works to conserve Athens' heritage.
While it's a great honor, it doesn't do very much to protect the properties themselves. At the national level, they'll offer various incentives and tax write-offs and things like that to try to get you to take care of historic places. But if somebody ultimately wants to come through with a wrecking ball, there's very little that the national government has to say about that.
Valentine says that the real nuts and bolts of preservation around the country take place at the local level, where local governments determine what sections of their town should be protected from unrestricted development and demolition. West downtown includes sites like the Hot Corner, where Black-owned businesses have historically and continue to thrive, as well as the First United Methodist Church, the 40 Watt, Sine, Creature Comforts, and Chuck's Fish. However, not all of these places were included in the historic district, for reasons we'll get to in a second. A local historic district already protects much of East Downtown and was established in 2006. The recent push to extend the same protections to the opposite end of downtown has been spearheaded by District 3 Commissioner Melissa Link. In a contentious meeting in January of 2019, the commission passed a temporary ban on demolition downtown after First United Methodist Church expressed interest in tearing down the Say Building, a 100-year-old Greek Revival building currently serving as office space. Tuesday's commission meeting was similarly tense as parts of the commission set out to essentially make that temporary ban permanent. The commission heard from the public, with about half in support and half in opposition. Though one of the initially stated missions of the historic district is to preserve the history and legacy of Athens' Black population, and in particular Black-owned businesses, several Black business owners were in opposition. Kenneth Caladova is a lawyer representing the owners of Brown's Barbershop, Wilson's Styling Shop, and the Manhattan, all businesses who oppose the historic district. Here he is at Tuesday's meeting.
Let's use Mr. Brown's Barbershop as an example. Mr. Lonnie, the assistant planning director for the county, at one of the meetings showed us a picture of a potential use of the property just behind Mr. Brown's building, this big skyscraper running right up to the back of the Hot Corner properties. Let's say that the developer of that building says to Mr. Brown, I'll pay you 5 times the value of your property if I can put my building on it. Will the passage of this law forever eliminate that opportunity for Mr. Brown.
Those businesses, as well as the First United Methodist Church's main building, with the noted exclusion of the Say building they wanted to tear down, were removed from the historic district. The vote approving the historic district passed 6-3. In a heated exchange, District 9 Commissioner Ovita Thornton chided her fellow commissioners for what she felt was a dismissive attitude towards several opposing speakers.
I don't know about nobody else, but if this was such an important issue, we would have been working on it long before now. But we wait till a moratorium is about to lift. The smirks I've seen on some of my fellow commissioners' faces, it is not appreciated. You take the folk that spoke like they were jokes.
Commissioners and members of the downtown in support of the historic district felt that its approval was crucial to the preservation of downtown's unique identity, which some feel is under threat by a glut of student high-rises and large chains moving in. In the end, the recent approval of the new historic district means that if property owners want to make a major change to the exterior of their building, they'll have to get approval from the Historic Preservation Commission, a 7-member body of Athens residents appointed by the mayor commission that meets once per month. And in most cases, demolition will be off the table. If the affected property owners are hesitant about this new hoop to jump through, Tommy Valentine thinks they'll come around. He points out that there's an 8-year freeze on property tax assessments for them. And as for getting approval from the HPC, he says that with collaboration, those plans are almost always approved. 97%, he says. Plus, it's good for business.
You know, historic areas give communities a sense of identity, a sense of continuity to the past. They serve as a great competitive advantage. I mean, when employers are choosing which cities to move to, they want to choose places that have unique culture. One of the other things that studies show about historic preservation is that old buildings are really good for new businesses. So if you're Creature Comforts or you're Cine, you're Rook and Pawn, when you're launching your startup, you really want to give the sense that you're there to stay.
The Brown brothers at Brown's Barbershop, who opposed the historic district and ended up being excluded from the final plan, didn't want to be interviewed. But one of them told me, basically, we don't want anything to change. We want everything to stay the way it is. For Athens News Matters, I'm Jean Davis.
Restaurants, gyms, hair salons, and countless other businesses shut their doors in March to slow the initial spread of COVID-19. Now it's November, and all sectors of the economy continue to struggle during this ongoing economic crisis. But what exactly does the Athens economy look like right now? And what can we expect to see in the upcoming winter months? David Bradley, the president and CEO of the Athens Area Chamber of Commerce, is with me to answer some of these questions. Welcome back to Athens News Matters, David.
Oh, Chris, it's my pleasure.
Well, it's been over 6 months since the pandemic hit. Can you tell us how the Athens economy is managing after such a long period of financial struggle?
One way you can measure the economic vitality of the community is in retail sales. Many of us would have thought that retail sales would be down 20 to 30%. It'd be disastrous. Retail sales are really only down 2 to 3 to 4%. So what that tells you is that we really are in a K recovery where some business sectors like home improvement, grocery stores, they are having their best years ever. Yet the business sectors that are the most apt to fall prey to the economy, those sectors, they're the downside of that K.
Mm.
A real promising step was when students came back in August. So it gave a little bit of hope. The next significant step was when football came back. So those are significant steps to move forward. But when you compare it to what we would have had this time last year, we probably had that our retail, restaurant, and hospitality industry has suffered to the tunes of probably $200 million. A lot of those are independently owned and operated, and you're still just waiting on the edge for some hope, for some more people to walk through that door, or for another round of emergency relief.
Well, you mentioned students. I want to talk a little bit more about that. You know, they contribute significantly to the Athens economy, and they've been ordered to stay off campus from Thanksgiving until January. How might this impact Athens' fourth quarter?
It's going to be hard. It's going to be yet another punch to the gut for most all of the businesses, you know, downtown, but all the small businesses in town. Frankly, it's probably the right call to make. But Chris, I'm going to tell you, it has to be a wake-up call for us as Athenians. It's so imperative. on us to keep in mind the folks who have invested their dreams and their life savings and that continue to get a punch to the gut over which they have no control. So we are getting ready to start a campaign to shop local Athens. Your ath depends on it. Spending our money locally this year is the most important way to keep it going, particularly now that students aren't going to be around. The other thing that I would say that it has, there's a hope for, is the next round of Paycheck Protection Program funding.
You know, you speak about the federal funding, but I also know the ACC government has allocated some resiliency funds to assist small businesses and nonprofits. How's that program working out?
That has worked out really well. The joint development agreement was set up between Athens-Clarke County government and the city of Winterville. So, you know, Athens-Clarke County really has stepped up pretty substantially.
I feel like it's just so much gloom and doom, and yet you've brought some hope with some of your thoughts and some of the questions that I'm asking and what you're telling us has got me feeling like it's going to be tough, but there's some ways we can help. Can you describe one or two locally owned businesses that have been particularly innovative in adjusting to the pandemic before we go?
You know, the Brashers at Escape the Space Escape Room. So they developed a virtual escape room that we ran our staff through, and it was magnificent. And so much so that I wound up doing it virtually with friends from across the country. And that's a part of their module that they will continue to run forever. You know, this is not so much of what a private business has done, but we need to give credit to Athens-Clarke County government. They have taken small little parklets or streetlets or whatever you want to call them and closed them up in streets that didn't have much traffic but could also be used to have outside seating for local restaurants. And they've been really imaginative about how to do that in ways that will stick around for a long time.
David Bradley is the CEO and president of the Athens Area Chamber of Commerce. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
My name is Sophie Gratis. One of the things that I'm going to take away from this internship, and this is going to sound cheesy, but it's what to look for in a work environment. I've just felt so welcomed and valued during my time working for WUGA. I think it's so vital to understand what it's like to be in a work environment where you're supported and you're valued, and to take that with you when you're looking for employers in the future.
Learn more about WUGA internships at wuga.org. This is Athens News Matters from WUGA News. I'm Alexia Ridley. Joining me today to discuss the week in news and politics are Gwen O'Looney from WXAG, Lee Shearer from the Athens Banner-Herald, and Blake Odd from Flagpole Magazine. So this week, the Marion Commission had a meeting Tuesday night, which was, for them, a bit more contentious than a normal meeting over the creation of a historic district covering the west part of downtown. So first, what happened and why did this discussion get rather contentious for our ACC commission?
The historic districts are always contentious. We have 15 or 16 of them, and I've covered at least half a dozen, and they've all been very contentious. This is the Hot Corner area, which was a prominent African-American business community in the first half of the 20th century. But the Black property owners who are still there did not want to be in the district. So there was some conflict there. You know, there are issues of the possibility of student high-rises coming into this part of downtown, the loss of kind of the creative arts and music scene. You know, there's a possibility that with a new high-rise development that this part of downtown could really sort of lose its charm as sort of the grungier, funkier side of downtown.
I think what happened was that this started out with the demolition permit request, the First Methodist, for the Say Building, which is a 100-year-old Greek Revival. At one point was the home of Southeastern Transportation that built the Art Deco bus station that is included in this district and should be. And I think that what happened was that when they brought in the experts and studied it, like any historic district, it needs to be a district. It's got to save more than buildings. It's got to save the scale and the feeling and the design. And I think that it was kind of a disconnect between people who only thought of it as that one building for almost 2 years. And then at the end, they brought in these professional studies that showed the district. And I think that then a lot of people didn't come along, with that new idea. They were surprised by it, didn't feel included, et cetera.
Yeah, those are all great points, Quinn. Yeah, I agree entirely with that. And, the churches were very opposed to it, and the churches were taken out of the district as well. But the Say building, as you mentioned, is still in, and that was really the impetus of the whole thing 2 years ago when the church wanted to tear that building down and make it a parking lot. And then, of course, there were a lot of questions of, well, what are you going to do with it after that?
As usual, this has come up when a lot of the district is already gone. And I kind of agree with Ovita Thornton, who actually voted against this, but her point was, what about other areas that we don't even talk about, like including Whitehall of all places?
So we are talking about Whitehall. I mean, there is a conversation going on about making Whitehall a historic district. And Cobham, which Ovita Thornton also mentioned, already is a historic district.
Well, both our 10-year master plan and the Envision Athens plan, both of those plans include a recommendation for a community-wide historic preservation plan.
So let's move on from the historic district to tax allocation districts, or TADs. One thing the commission dealt with a few weeks ago, as we were all following the aftermath of the election, is the creation of 6 tax allocation districts. So what's the status of those districts and what are the next steps?
Commission has approved these tax allocation districts, which are about 7% of the tax digest. And they're 20-year districts, which means that the growth in these districts will not go into the general fund of the county, as it usually does, but will be designated for specific sorts of improvement projects. The commission has met recently with the Board of Education, asking them to participate in these districts. The schools get about 60% of property tax revenue, and at a committee meeting of the school board's government affairs committee earlier this week, the chief financial officer said this would lose the school district $162 million over 20 years if the present rates of growth continue. Now, the great majority of that, $131 million, would be from just one of these districts, the downtown area.
I just have to point out, and even the school board's lawyer made this mistake when he wrote to the school board about this, but it doesn't alleviate any taxes. The developer pays the same amount of taxes as they would ordinarily pay. It's just that the new part of that tax goes into the district.
The part attributed to growth.
Most communities don't put 6 on the board at one time. They start the process a little bit differently. So it'll be interesting to see if this is an effective, approach.
I think six was the only way they could get the commissioners to agree.
I mean, the thing was when Mayor Gertz first brought this up last year, he wanted, I think, 2. On Newton Bridge in East Athens, and then all the other commissioners kept saying, well, what about my district? What about Atlanta Highway? What about Lexington Road? So it just kind of snowballed. They wound up doing 6 all at one time, but usually usually there's a specific development attached to these things, and there is not in this case.
Right.
And so aren't they usually 10 years rather than
to do it? Creating these districts without having any kind of specific project.
Right. Or investors. You know, usually you have interest. This is the old, you know, if we build it, they will come approach, and it doesn't always work.
In the Newton Bridge area, at least, I mean, it's already booming. I mean, there are several major projects going on in that area already. And I think one reason they wanted to make the TAD is they wanted to capture that because they want to do some kind of like greenway improvements and things like that, bike lanes, bike paths. But, you know, it could be a great thing for like North Avenue and, you know, Lexington Road, Gaines School, maybe the mall, because there is going to be need to be some kind of public investment to spruce up those areas, I think, because obviously there's not a lot of private development interest or redevelopment interest there.
I think these were designed to encourage development in blighted areas, which the downtown area certainly is not. And
right.
Newton Bridge is not. They're doing just fine without any sort right. of help.
So before we are running a little low on time, and before we go, let's touch on the key dates for the two upcoming runoff elections, December 1st and January 5th. And December 1st, obviously, that's when voters in Athens, Clark, and Oconee County decide who their DA is going to be. And then January 5th, everybody decides on U.S. senators. And then also we have a PSC race.
Yeah. Early voting starts this Monday. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday before Thanksgiving is early voting when everybody's out of town and cooking turkey.
Early voting is going to be at the Board of Elections office until 5 p.m. on Monday, and at the Board of Elections and the library, the tennis center, that one of them, and the Office of Extension till 7 p.m. on Tuesday, and then back to normal 5 p.m. closing at all of those locations Wednesday.
And another, I've gotten several calls about this, so another thing we should mention is if you want to vote absentee in the DA race on December 1st, you have to request an absentee ballot. It will not be sent to you automatically. For the runoff on January 5th, you will get one automatically, not for December 1st. So you have to call or email the ACC Board of Elections to get that absentee. And then, of course, take it to a drop box. Don't try to mail it back in. There's not going to be time.
Not going to be enough time.
There's, I believe, 6 drop boxes all around town. This right. information is on the Board of Elections website, the locations, so you can drop that off.
Some very valuable information people need to know. Next week, you could actually go vote. I'm glad we managed to get that in there, but that is it for this week. That's all the time we have. I do want to thank my panelists, Lee Shearer from the Athens Banner-Herald, Blake Aud from Flagpole Magazine, and Gwen O'Looney from WXAG. Coming up later in the show, fighting pandemic fatigue and why it's crucial to keep following public health guidance, even if you're burned out on masks and social distancing.
My name is Pamela Cohn. I am the executive director of Cine, Athens' only nonprofit cinema and event space that builds community through art and culture. We highly recommend WGA underwriting to any business or organization that strives for excellence, listens local, and aspires to engage our diverse Athens community in meaningful discourse, dialogue, and lively conversation. Find out how you can become an underwriter by emailing wuga@uga.edu.
This is Athens News Matters. I'm Chris Shoup.
And I'm Alexia Ridley. We're well into autumn now, and that means falling leaves. And that, in turn, means sometimes waking up far too early on a weekend to the grating din of leaf blowers. Now, some Athens-Clarke County officials are talking about a ban on some types of leaf blowers. Jessica Wurst has details on the plan.
Picture this. You're working from home, and as if that isn't difficult enough already with back-to-back Zoom calls, the dogs barking, and kids in the background, your neighbor decides that today is the perfect opportunity to beautify his lawn. So this is what you hear for a good portion of your workday. And depending on how many neighbors you have, this might be the soundtrack to many workdays out of the week.
It's a growing problem. It's gotten to where in some neighborhoods, every single day, all day long, a gas leaf blower can be heard.
That's District 7 Commissioner Russell Edwards. He says that the noise, while teeth-grindingly irritating, isn't the only issue with gas-powered leaf blowers.
The exhaust is much more harmful than the exhaust from even a four-stroke engine or a car engine, but also the ultra-fine particulates that get thrust in the air by the hurricane-force winds created by these machines. You know, you'll often see dust clouds, you know, surrounding the operators. And that dust contains mold spores, silica, pet feces. And so all of that is being inhaled along with the exhaust from these machines. And it's a health hazard.
Edwards and the constituents he represents have been raising concerns for years about the use of gas-powered leaf blowers. And recently, Mayor Kelly Gertz requested the commissioners to conduct research about regulating the use of these machines. Mayor Kelly Gertz.
For years, myself and members of the county commission have fielded some complaints about the extent and duration of leaf blower noise in residential neighborhoods. And we know this has impact on the quality of life for our residents.
Edwards again.
I think folks are most hopeful that we can put some reasonable limits on when these machines are allowed to be operated. And I think looking long term, I don't think it's out of the question to consider providing incentives to phase out the use of these machines and phase in the use of battery-operated machines.
Russell Edwards' colleague, District 3 Commissioner Melissa Link, agrees.
I particularly am interested in, you know, drastically restricting them in more tightly knit neighborhoods where you have homes close together and it's really in your face if your neighbor's using a leaf blower.
Not every commissioner is on board, though. District 1 Commissioner Patrick Davenport says that imposing such regulations would be another blow to local businesses already struggling with an uncertain, halting economy.
Yeah, we have some commissioners who are interested in banning leaf blowers. I'm not one of them. You know, it will impact small businesses. And of course, you know, going through this pandemic, they've already been hurt enough.
And because of the types of businesses that use gas-powered leaf blowers, the damage could disproportionately impact the most vulnerable business owners.
You know, mostly hurt the entrepreneurs and the immigrant community as well, and they're doing the best that they can to put food on the table.
But Gertz says that if regulations were to be implemented, there would more than likely be a transitional phase to support business owners who work with these machines.
Turning on and off a switch around equipment use is not so easy for a small business. It wouldn't surprise me if a prospective outcome would be to phase this in over a series of years. So to ensure full life for equipment somebody may have invested in and then purchase of new, less damaging equipment.
There are already over 100 cities in the United States with similar ordinances, most of which are in California. Russell Edwards says that Athens could start a domino effect for other Georgian communities in making this transition to electric leaf blowers.
We've led the way on other municipal policies. You know, a lot of our pandemic protection policies, when we first flattened the curve in March, we were the first municipality to act in Georgia. Many others followed. So, yeah, it's not out of the question.
One thing seems certain. This is not a policy that's going to happen in the short term. Commissioners don't expect to begin work on potential regulations until several months from now. For Athens News Matters, I'm sorry, can you turn that off for a second? Thank you. For Athens News Matters, I'm Jessica Wurst.
Let's face it, 2020 has been a long, hard year. And by now, if you're sick and tired of having to make sure you remember your mask every time you leave the house, or if you're thoroughly burned out on social distancing, we can't blame you. Pandemic fatigue is a thing, and it's got some public health experts worried. Megan Wan has this report.
Hi, neighbors.
When the coronavirus pandemic halted in-person classes at the University of Georgia, forcing a switch to virtual instruction for the duration of spring 2020, media law professor Dr. Jonathan Peters decided to emulate one of the most optimistic people in American pop culture, Mr. Rogers.
Could you be mine? Won't you be my Zoom friend online?
Taking his own spin on the well-known intro to the show Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, Peters donned a classic knit cardigan to speak directly to his students about his excitement to reconnect with them, despite the unconventional circumstances. That was back in March, and while Peters, an eternal optimist, still strives to make the best of any situation, it's still been tough.
I think that for the most part, I'm doing well. I've definitely had my challenging moments. At the beginning, I was habituated as I normally would be, thinking when I leave the house, phone, wallet, keys, that sort of thing. And then it becomes, phone, wallet, keys, mask, hand sanitizer, social distancing. And that's hard. It's difficult to habituate those new routines. I'm guessing that I've experienced many, many of the frustrations and challenges that a lot of people have.
Looking back, it certainly feels like we've all been trying to run a marathon without any real finish line. And just like when running, sometimes we might experience a bit of fatigue.
So when we talk about like pandemic fatigue, really any type of fatigue, we're really talking about like a level of burnout.
That's Lakeisha Gant, a licensed psychologist in Athens, Clark County.
I think it's probably safe to say that there are a lot of people that may be experiencing pandemic fatigue. The issue is like, what do we do with it?
According to Gant, this fatigue can manifest itself in a number of ways for different people, including feeling disconnected, apathetic, or experiencing a cycle of emotions. Sometimes it also looks like making small mistakes because something has been pushed from the forefront of our minds, or an exacerbation of things we've already been feeling, like anxiety or loneliness.
I think it manifests itself emotionally, psychologically, and then those in turn, of course, impact our behaviors.
Mark Abel is a family physician and professor of epidemiology at UGA.
The flu season hasn't really even begun yet in Georgia, but when it does, we're obviously very concerned about a rise in cases. And I think you can already see that happening in other parts of the country where the flu is starting to hit.
But at the same time, Gant stresses that we can't allow our own mental health to become an afterthought in the midst of trying to do our part in ensuring the health of our communities.
Taking time to do things that we know bring us a sense of peace. That's going to be different for different people. And it's also going to be different across what we have access to. You or I, if we haven't heard from people that we normally connect with, being sure that we take note of those sudden changes and then like thinking about ways that we can connect with them.
What also might contribute to this fatigue is the information that comes with the pandemic, leading us to doom scroll through Twitter and immerse ourselves in a seemingly never-ending litany of bleakness.
I think I had a tendency in the beginning. I felt like I was drinking from a fire hose of news and information, most of it bad. What I began to do was to tune in, mainly to negative stories.
Gant likened this information intake to slowly but surely filling a tall glass with drops of water until the glass is completely full.
But at some point it fills up. And it can no longer function in the way that it was meant to function.
Thus, it's important to mitigate and find a balance in the information we take in. As Thanksgiving quickly approaches, Abel states the safest thing for people to do is celebrate with those they're already living with. It's easy to look at rapidly ticking statistics and numbers and get overwhelmed. Instead, when asked why it's important to maintain individual momentum in keeping with COVID-19 standards, Abel cites stories. A wedding in Maine turned virus spreader event, a ship crew of over 100 getting infected.
I mean, I think we have to acknowledge that, this is really hard for people, that this pandemic fatigue is real and affects most of us to some extent. And if you've been really careful and really good about this for the past 6 or 7 months, you've given up a lot. But, you've made an investment in your health by doing that and in the health of your family. And thinking about it that way tends to motivate me to not waste all of that hard work.
For Athens News Matters, I'm Megan Wan.
After a roller coaster season, the NBA wrapped up its finals last month, and Major League Baseball held the World Series as well. Meanwhile, we're in the midst of both the college and professional football seasons, and college basketball starts next week. With all of the major sports trying their best to keep playing, we thought it was a good time to check in on how the various leagues are handling the safety of their players, coaches, support staff, and of course fans. To get some insight, I talked to Jonathan McGinty from the local sports website Beyond the Trestle. Welcome back to Athens News Matters.
Thank you.
First of all, can you just give us an overall update on the specific procedures the NFL has in place to prevent outbreaks of the virus among professional football teams?
Well, it looks like they're going to really crack down as we hit the home stretch here. The NFL is not playing in a bubble like the NBA and the NHL was, so they're traveling a good bit, which means you may have low case counts here and you're going to go to a place with high case counts. Minus a bubble, there's really only so much you can do. But what the NFL is trying to do is get to that finish line. And I think having the universal mask wearing for everybody during practice is a step in the right direction. They're going to go to virtual meetings. They're not going to be able to gather in the big rooms like they used to. They are going to double their testing during the week. They're going to try to do more testing so they can get ahead if somebody is at the beginning stages of having the virus, they can isolate them.
What about the idea of limited attendance? We've seen that sort of all over the place too, right?
Yeah, from what I can gather, it appears to be, particularly in the NFL, a state-by-state, sometimes even city-by-city ordinance. So, for instance, like the New England Patriots, the regulations in Massachusetts do not allow for there to be any fans in there. I saw something with, this was in college football, but Notre Dame, they employed the services of some of their statisticians in their academic departments to develop a pattern for seating, which would minimize spread. And it wasn't everybody stacked up in one row. It was they're scattered about more organically.
Well, you mentioned college football. Can you explain just roughly some of the differences we may notice with regard to specific procedures?
The policies for what they're wearing from a protective standpoint appear to be, I don't want to say uniform, but they're all following CDC guidelines. There are various masks, they're doing the distancing, they're doing everything that you can do to the best of your ability.
Well, let's move on to basketball quickly. What effect is COVID going to have on the next NBA season? I feel like we just got done with it, but now here we are. We're getting ready to jumpstart the regular season.
They're going to move away from the bubble, at least in the beginning. To me, they're starting a little earlier than I would like for them to. A lot of it, I mean, it's revenue, and I understand that. They're going to start December 22nd so they can have their slate of Christmas games because they sort of own that day from a sports perspective. And, you know, I think they'll probably, if they have any fans, it'll be that 20% or less. They'll adhere to what Georgia announced today in college basketball where, you know, you're going to have to wear a mask the entire time you're inside the building. And I think they capped it at like at 1,600, which is about 10% of what segment. So the interesting thing to watch with the NBA is it will be the sport that is ongoing real time while widespread vaccine distribution is rolled out.
Well, quickly, how about college basketball? I know the NCAA announced their intention to have the entire postseason tournament played in one city. How's that going to affect things like seeding and then the regular season?
This, I think, is the right approach. It's going to be, again, basketball is going to be tough because it's an indoor sport. And if you're minimizing travel, if you're able to keep teams in hotels, that's going to be to the benefit of everybody. I think it's going to be a challenge because unlike the NBA, where they play at a end of a regular season and then, you know, 7-game playoff series, you might have a team they could lose in the first round. So you've made all this effort to go to Indianapolis, adhere to the protocol, then come back. It's
right.
Beneficial for those teams who can play long term, but it's going to be a one and done for a lot of teams, and that's going to be a challenge.
Jonathan, thanks so much.
Thank you.
This is Athens News Matters from WUGA News.
An All Things Considered story starts with the news.
Two women set to become the first female Army Rangers ever.
That day, we wanted to follow it with a conversation from a woman who was in the military.
So we just email everybody.
Whittle it down to one. We get her on the phone.
Welcome to the program, Sergeant Marquez.
Thank you very much, Audie.
I want to start just with your reaction.
There's more to every story on All Things Considered every afternoon.
This is Athens News Matters. I'm Alexia Ridley.
And I'm Chris Shoup. Georgia rocker Randall Bramblett has a new record out, his 15th. Our critic at large, John Slight, says this album shows that the 72-year-old multi-instrumentalist shows no signs of slowing down.
In spurts we live.
Athens' own Randall Bramblett has been a mainstay in the rock music genre for nearly 50 years. Starting his long career as a session musician, Bramblett contributed horns and keyboards to albums from rock and roll greats such as Greg Allman, the Atlanta Rhythm Section, Elvin Bishop, and BJ Thomas. Bramblett's big break would come in 1977 when he would join ex-members of the Allman Brothers Band and the jazz fusion group Sea Level. Bramblett stayed with Sea Level until their 1980 breakup. After the demise of that group, Bramblett worked with other artists and bands, such as Steve Winwood, Robbie Robertson, and the legendary British progressive rock group Traffic, a band he would join for their 1994 reunion tour as a saxophonist and keyboardist. In addition to Bramblett's work as a session musician, he's also maintained a prolific career as a solo artist. Since 1975, Bramblett has released over a dozen solo albums, including his most recent effort, 2020's Pine Needle Fire.
Some poor soul had to get up at four.
Collaborating with musicians such as guitarist Nick Johnson, drummer Seth Hendershot, and producer Jerry Hansen, who contributed additional guitar and atmospherics, the 72-year-old Bramblett has created one of his finest works yet. Opening with Some Poor Soul, Bramblett delivers a soulful vocal atop a fuzzy Wurlitzer electric piano.
Just another morning. Oh well, go out and have yourself.
That's Rocket to Nowhere, the second track on Pine Needle Fire. The song evokes the feel of vintage Southern soul. The horns are soulful, and the Wurlitzer returns. This time, it's processed through a wah-wah pedal, giving the track a distinctly funky feel.
Just wanna feel the wind on your skin. And you don't mind.
The highlight of the album comes in the form of the title track. Pine Needle Fire is a love song, but a very cool, earthy one that's not at all saccharine or pretentious. Brush drumming, subtle psychedelic atmospherics, and gorgeous strings evoke a laid-back vibe. The lyrics are stunning, with the words painting quite a picture. Smoke is rising like a black snake in the sky, Bramblett croons.
Out on the firebreak lines and up the tower we will climb.
I've Got Faith in You is another highlight. An acoustic-based number, it's a song about keeping the faith in others through the good times and the bad. Tommy Talton guests on the song and delivers a chilling slide guitar solo performed on the late Allman Brothers Band guitarist Dwayne Allman's Gibson SG. Never Be Another Day also carries a strong message. Featuring a prominent Hammond organ performance from Bramblett, the song is about living life to the fullest each day, since we've only got so many todays before our time runs out. You've got the fire and the spirit in you. Don't let the world put it out, Bramblett sings.
Never be another day like the one you're living. Never be another chance. Never be another song like the one you're feeling. Never be better time.
My Lucky Day closes the album. It's a down-tempo number, but it features a great synth solo that kicks in about a minute and 45 seconds into the track. The synth provides My Lucky Day with some added muscle, and the backing vocals are strong. It's a solid way to close the album. Overall, at 72 years old, Bramblett is still as good as ever. Pine Needle Fire is a strong album, with an earthy Americana sound. It's an authentic portrait of a talented musician and songwriter, with plenty of great musical moments and highlights throughout. The album is thoroughly enjoyable start to finish. For Athens News Matters, I'm John Slights.
You've been listening to Athens News Matters from WUGA News. Our producers are Martin Matheny, Gene Davis, Sydney Spencer, Megan Wan, Jessica Wurst, and Laura Yordanova. The opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of WUGA or the University of Georgia. As always, you can listen back to today's stories and all of our stories on our website at WUGA.org or on the WUGA mobile app available for Apple and Android. And of course, we'd like for you to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at WUGA-FM. For Chris Shoup, I'm Alexia Ridley, and this has been Athens News Matters from WUGA News. We'll be taking next week off for the Thanksgiving holiday, but we're back in 2 weeks with another episode. Until then, please wear a mask, stay safe, and thanks for listening.